Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 65, recorded Saturday, June 21st, 2008. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on today's Travel Commons Podcast: new ways to the front of the line, and Southwest skips nickels and dimes. This week, coming to you today from the Travel Commons studio outside of Chicago, Illinois, thanks to all of you who remained subscribed while I took a month off the podcast. All of my May creative time, all that time for the month of May was consumed while I was creating a recognition video for my daughter's fifth grade class. Looking back over 6 years, kindergarten through fifth grade in her primary school, as she and her class move now to a new building, a new school, a middle school next year. Not to get into the gory details, but suffice it to say that I spent way too much time with Adobe After Effects. And in true consulting fashion, I worked on the deliverable right to the deadline, finally burning the video to DVD at 3 a.m., the day of the recognition ceremony. The final product was good, but it took me a couple of weeks to recover from the effort. I've been playing around with Doppler, the website that lets you share your travel plans with others. I've yet to sort of serendipitously meet up with anyone, which I think is the main objective of the website. But, it does provide an easy way to look back on my travel. And since the last episode, I've been to New York, Memphis, San Francisco, and multiple trips to Cleveland. Doppler also helpfully totes up my carbon footprint for these travels, telling me that with these flights, I've contributed 2.7 metric tons of CO2 to the atmosphere. Helpful information with a side order of guilt. What else can one ask? Following up, thanks to Drew Leifheit of the Budacast podcast for mentioning Travel Commons in his article on travel podcasts. It's called Travelcasting. There's a new term. How many more podcasts? Travelcast. Travelcasting, lightening up your backpack, load up your iPod. And it's on the Vagabondish website. It has a nice list. Drew puts together a nice list of travel podcasts, and I'll put a link in the show notes. Tommy Manley obviously has had a bit of time on his hands because he's listened deep into the Travel Commons archives, which prompted him to contribute this story. Mark, I just listened to Travel Commons podcast number 54 and thought I would share my traveling injured story with you. I live in Orlando and was in New York on business in April. On the second night of my trip, I slipped while walking down some stairs. I only went down a couple of stairs, but hurt my ankle in the process. Somewhat embarrassed, I jumped up and said, "I'm okay," and limped out the door. I determined that it was just a sprained ankle and walked 5 blocks to our hotel in great pain. I put ice on my ankle at the hotel and then went to bed. The next morning, my ankle was the size of a softball and I was in serious pain. We took a taxi to the emergency room. Turns out that the small bone in my leg just above the ankle was broken and would require surgery to fix with a metal plate and screws. I asked about returning to Orlando for the surgery. I was told I could if I wanted to. A cast had to be put on immediately to protect the injury anyway, and I could travel with it as long as it was done in a few days. I was also told that because this hospital was a trauma center, I could be bumped if more serious cases came in. I opted to stay. They told me not to eat in case they could get me into surgery that day. After 8 hours in the emergency room waiting for a regular room, the doctor told me that they would not get to me. I could eat. They got me a room. 7 a.m. the next day, Saturday, they said a trauma case had come in. I was bumped again. I was told that I was scheduled for surgery the next day, Sunday. So Sunday morning came. I went to surgery. I was up on a walker by noon, ready to go out. If I had to do it all over again, I would have left the emergency room with my cast and flown back to Orlando immediately. But, you know, here's now where the travel part comes in. Since I usually sit in an exit row, I had to call the airline to move to a different seat. I was hoping that I could get a first-class seat given my situation. I'm a gold-level frequent flyer, so I know that there are usually first-class seats available. Unfortunately, because I'd used points to purchase my ticket, upgrading was not an option, and getting bumped certainly was not an option. They wouldn't even let me pay for an upgrade. My only option was to purchase a first-class ticket. Well, the flight time's not too long, so I just decided to move to a bulkhead aisle on a side that I could stretch my leg out during the flight and figure out some way to elevate it. My bulkhead seat probably had the least legroom of any I've flown. To elevate my leg, I scooted down to my seat and propped up my foot in the magazine rack with my knee in my face. The flight attendant brought me over two pillows. I was in that position for the entire flight. The painkillers helped a lot. So now I'm wondering, what else could I have done with the airline to get a better seat? Would a MedJet evacuation policy be a good investment? But I'll tell you, Tommy, that one's a tough story. I've got bad knees that get stiff and hurt just when I sit too long in a bulkhead seat, even in first class. So I can just imagine what it's like when you got a broken leg. And while uncomfortable, it was good that you at least were able to fly home from New York to Orlando. In Travel Commons number 56, I told the story about having to drive my dad, my mom, my sister, and her daughter from San Diego to their home in Denver after my dad was medevaced from San Jose del Cabo in Mexico to San Diego to replace a broken hip. After the surgery, the doctors wouldn't let him fly, so I ended up piloting a Chrysler minivan on an 1,100-mile journey. But comfort and time aside, you know, you look at the costs. My dad's medevac flight from Cabo cost, I don't know, somewhere north, if I remember correctly, it was somewhere north of $25,000. A one-way first-class seat on Tommy's New York to Orlando flight would have set him back, you know, given the day and given the airline, somewhere between $400 and $1,000. Now, a single membership in an air ambulance service like AirMed or MedJet Assist runs $225 a year. Now, Alan Marco, a longtime Travel Commons listener, wrote after hearing my story in Travel Commons number 56 about my dad. Alan said that he has a family plan for he and his wife with AirMed. You know, just like any other insurance policy, he hopes he never has to use it, but it's there just in case to avoid situations like Tommy's or like my dad's. Now, on a lighter, much lighter note, Jess Green sent me a link to this song by the Bar and Grill Singers, a group of singing attorneys from Austin, Texas, to the tune of Leaving on a Jet Plane.
All my bags are packed, I have my ID, a printed itinerary, a boarding pass and major credit card. And I'll show you that my computer works. I'll shake my head at all the jerks whose crankiness is making this so hard.
It's way too hard.
So frisk me to check for clues. Tell me to take off my shoes. Touch me, ask me what you need to know. 'Cause I'm leaving on a jet plane. Just stand in line and don't complain.
And soon they'll let me go. It's embarrassing each time I hear detectors beep on my brassiere. It's underwire, so watch your hands, you punk. There's no hurry now, my flight's delayed. It's all because somebody made a joke and asked, so is our pilot drunk?
So is he drunk? So frisk me to check for clues. Tell me to take off my shoes. Touch me, ask me what you need to know.
'cause I'm leaving on a jet plane. Just stand in line and don't complain.
And soon we'll get to go. Now it's time, unless they're lying, one more line, and I'll be flying a random search, and I'll be on my way. At the gate, what's this I see? My airline declared bankruptcy. They've canceled every flight they had today.
I'm pissed and I want some booze. Tell me where they took my shoes. Hold me back, 'cause there's one thing I know. I'm not leaving, there's no jet plane. Just 18 hours down the drain.
Leaving, there's no jet plane.
Leaving,
just 18 hours
no
down the drain.
There's no jet plane,
just 18 hours down the drain.
Someday, we'll get to go.
Well, I'll tell you, John Denver must be spinning in his grave with that one, but it's good. I tell you, I listened to it a couple of times looking for where I could edit it down, but I don't know, the whole thing was good, so I just put the whole thing in. Thanks to the Bar and Grill Singers for the song and Jess Green for sending along the link. I'll put a link to the Bar and Grill Singers and to the song in the show notes. And hey, if you have a link, a story, a comment, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address, comments@travelcommons.com, or you can post them on the website at travelcommons.com. The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is new ways to the front of the line. Now, over the past 6 weeks, I've had firsthand experience with a couple of the TSA's recent attempts to provide what they call an overall increase in throughput, those being the Registered Traveler Program and the Diamond Lane Self-Select Program. Now, as I mentioned in episode number 64, the last episode, CLEAR, one of the Registered Traveler Programs, is offering a free one-year or first-year membership to top-tier status members of at least Hyatt's and Marriott's frequent sleeper programs. They may be others, but those are two programs that I got mailings from. I applied online in April, and flying through San Francisco through SFO in May was my first chance to try it. Now, the CLEAR line was easy to find. There was a nice, bright, blue and white CLEAR sign on the top of the pole. I walked past, mind you, the nearly empty first class premium status security line, past the mostly full regular security line to the completely empty CLEAR line. I presented my driver's license and my CLEAR card to the TSA screener, who then handed them to the CLEAR employee right next to him, who then handed them back, I think, to the screener. There were two of them. They were going back and forth. I followed the screener to the CLEAR machine 3 steps away, inserted my CLEAR card, and was directed by the machine to put my right index finger on the small reader pad. My two attempts with the fingerprint reader failed, my first two attempts. The TSA screener just sort of shrugged and pressed the try again icon on the touch screen. It seemed like a common occurrence. On my second try, I noticed a small window on the machine screen that displayed my fingerprint, and I could see that, you know, sort of because the angle of the reader pad, it was only picking up half of my fingerprint, thus, you know, the failure, obviously. So on my third attempt, I watched the little window, adjusted my finger until it picked up a full fingerprint, and then, bingo, right away, it immediately approved me. The screener then escorted me to a regular screening station, holding off a couple of other travelers so that I could go directly to the metal table and start putting my things into the gray bins. Now, on that Friday morning in SFO, the $100 a year CLEAR line saved me nothing over the free premium line. Indeed, with the card shuffle between the Clear employee and the TSA screener and the three tries at the fingerprint reader, I mean, the Clear line probably took me four times longer than having someone glance at my driver's license in the premium line. So learning that lesson on my next trip to SFO, I skipped the Clear line, blew straight through the United 1K status line. The real value for programs like Clear are at those airports without first class slash premium status security lines, places like Oakland, Reno Tahoe, San Jose, Orlando. Now, I tell you, if Clear could sign up Las Vegas with those brutally long lines and no premium lines, now there they'd have a real value proposition. Now, flying Southwest to Cleveland recently, I've also had a few experience with sort of the ski resort-inspired Diamond Lane self-select program at Chicago's Midway Airport. Now, the rightmost security lane has a black diamond sign designating it for expert flyers, defined by the TSA as the business travelers who fly several times a month. And then the next two lines have a blue square and are for casual flyers, defined as those who travel less frequently but are familiar with the security process. The remaining three lines have a green circle and are for families and special assistance passengers. The TSA claims that pilots in Denver and Salt Lake City, quote, have resulted in an overall increase in throughput and greatly increased customer satisfaction, end quote, and that both airports have, in the TSA words, experienced a reduction in wait times for expert travelers in the Black Diamond lanes. I got to tell you, my experience was a bit different. Now, the program started at Midway on Thursday, May 8th. Now, the following Monday, May 12th, I was catching the first Southwest flight to Cleveland, and I headed straight to the expert line. So did a lot of other people, not all of whom looked like business travelers who fly several times a month. It quickly became clear that the folks in front of me weren't expert flyers. They didn't have their IDs out and ready, they didn't know how to take their shoes off, they tried to take a bottle of water through, and they had to make multiple passes through the metal detector because of jewelry and spare change. Now, apparently, this isn't just a startup problem. Someone left a comment on the Travel Commons website that said, "I work for the TSA at Midway. I've been assigned to work in the Black Diamond or Expert lane several times since its induction, and I noticed the same thing as you. Most travelers in the Expert lane are not quite experts. Some have absolutely no clue. I think one of the main problems is because it's a self-select lane, which means anyone, even a first-time flyer, can deem themselves as an expert and go into whichever lane they choose. And we, as TSA, have no right to tell them to go into the casual lane." Well, I'll tell you, 2 weeks later, I was back at Midway catching the same flight to Cleveland. This time, though, I dropped into one of the casual lanes. The expert line was longer, and once again, about 50% of its inhabitants didn't look like frequent business flyers. I'll tell you, the flip-flops are a dead giveaway. So I matched my progress against an easy-to-spot marker in the expert lane, a really tall guy wearing a suit. The casual line ended up moving twice as fast as the expert line, even with our share of flip-flop wearers in the casual line. I don't know what the TSA did differently in Salt Lake City or Denver, but I haven't seen any lower wait times for expert travelers, and at least at that morning, the guys in the expert line certainly didn't look like their satisfaction was greatly increased.
Blackened sea, star curiosity, waves shifting blue and red.
The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is Southwest skips the nickels and dimes. Southwest's Fees Don't Fly With Us ad campaign goes straight at the legacy carrier's newfound love of add-on fees. American's $15 charge for checking a bag, U.S. Air's $2 Cokes, Delta's $25 charge for talking to a live booking agent. A full-page ad in Tuesday's USA Today showed how, for the same airfare, these fees make legacy carriers 10 to 25% more expensive than Southwest. Now, my recent travel schedule, flying to San Francisco one week and Cleveland the next, has given me the opportunity to do some near real-time side-by-side comparisons between Southwest and United Airlines. Now, 2 to 3 years ago, Southwest wasn't seen as a real alternative by most frequent travelers. Sure, their tickets cost a bit less, but the lack of assigned seating, that infamous cattle car boarding queue, kept most business travelers on the legacy carriers. However, over the past 12 to 18 months, Southwest seems to be getting the little things right. With their Business Select service, I pay $20 more than Southwest Standard Fare, which is a fully refundable fare that's competitive with most legacy carriers' non-refundable fares, and it puts me as one of the first 15 people on the plane, which means I'm guaranteed an aisle seat no matter how late I book the ticket. Unlike the situation anymore with packed flights on United, where I'm paying top dollar and feeling lucky when I can snag the middle seat exit row. The Business Select ticket also comes with a free drink. Now, that's not so useful on that first morning flight out to Cleveland, but it definitely compares favorably at the end of a long day to United's $5 charge for a beer and coach. But as impressive is what Southwest has done in their gate areas. Now, rather than making you stalk the cleaning crew to find an outlet to power up your laptop before your flight, at Midway, at Baltimore Washington International, and at Cleveland, my most recent Southwest experiences, Southwest has put in stools and a counter with electrical outlets between each stool, and they've also got nice leatherette chairs with electrical and USB power outlets for iPod and BlackBerry charging between every other chair. So, indeed, it's easier to do a pre-flight power-up for your electrical devices in these gate areas than it is, say, in United's Red Carpet Club or American's Admiral's Club. But there are some things that Southwest still can't match. Now, while I don't mind flying Southwest for, you know, the hour 15-minute flights to Cleveland or Detroit or Nashville, I don't fly them coast to coast. I'll tell you, there's something about a 4-hour flight from Chicago to San Francisco or a 6-hour flight from LA to New York that makes you appreciate the extra cushion of a first-class seat. And then there's this math. I'm taking my family to Thailand and Singapore for our summer vacation next month in July. I bought 3 round-trip coach tickets, and I spent $1,300 apiece. And using the 6 system-wide upgrades I've received from United for being a 1K member for 2 years, I upgraded those coach seats to $5,800 a seat business class seats. Those business class seats being key for the 20-hour flight from Chicago to Singapore. And then I ended up burning miles for the 4th business class seat. The value of my loyalty to United translated into $19,300 of free travel. You know, I like the changes Southwest has made. Until they can match up to that loyalty math, I don't see ditching United just quite yet. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 65. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The bridge music is from a couple of sources. You know, I got a number of positive comments on the Nine Inch Nails song from the last episode, so I went to that well again. This time, the song Discipline from the downloadable album The Slip. The next 2 songs are from Magnatune artists that we've played in past podcasts, One by Cargo Cult and Magnified from Very Large Array. Check the show notes for links. Now, if you have a story, a thought, a comment, a gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who's taken the time to send in emails and post comments on the website. And again, thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for staying subscribed. And thank you very much for stopping by the Travel Commons. Until next time, safe travels and take care. Bye now.
On the road, life is hell. Strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing can ease my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling down,